Welcome, listeners. This is Karen coming to you from the Talking Information Center. And I will be reading the Plymouth Independent for today's date, August 20th, 2026. Our first story, 17 homes sold for more than $1 million last month. It's been a hot summer for real estate in Plymouth, at least when it comes to the weather. Between heat waves and summer vacations, sales during the sultry season tend to hinge on the desirability and location of particular properties, not overall market conditions. In July, 123 homes changed hands across town, compared with 137 in June and 87 closings in May. We have reported month after month inventory. The number of homes for sale remains tight as prospective sellers wrestle with giving up their artificially low pandemic-era mortgage payments, and potential buyers slowly come to realization that interest rates are not likely to drop anytime soon. For buyers and sellers, it comes down to deciding how long they can put their lives on hold while waiting for more favorable economic conditions. The benchmark 30-year borrowing rate dipped slightly last week, its first decline in 6 weeks, to a 6.67%, according to Freddie Mac. That's still a bit higher than a year ago, but viewed through historical lens, rates are not exactly in the stratosphere. There was a time not so long ago that a fixed-rate mortgage under 10% was considered decent. In an indication that demand remains robust locally, the median sale price last month reached $707,500, a significant jump from June's $675,000 figure. The average sale price, a less reliable figure, because a handful of expensive homes can slew the numbers, was $820,691. 17 homes sold for more than $1 million in Plymouth during July, the Warren Group reported. Statewide, there are signs more people are starting to list homes for sale, which could help ease the housing crunch. Figures from the Massachusetts Association of Realtors show listings for single-family homes rose by 9.4% in July, and condominium listings were up by 3% compared to the same month in 2025. That marks the fourth consecutive month of modest increases in inventory. Compared with July 2025, it said closings in Massachusetts rose by 8.2% for single-family homes and 13.8% for condos. While so-called bidding wars have largely subsided, owners of the most in-demand homes in hot locations still have the upper hand. Despite the continued increase in closed sales and new listings throughout the summer, the low absorption rate shows the market is still leaning in favor of sellers, said Kristen Keegan, the group's president and a broker with Key Homes Realty. Well-priced homes are moving quickly, so buyers should be prepared to act when the right opportunity arises. Zillow's latest home value index showed 19,335 homes for sale statewide. The median sale price was $650,596, and in another indication that the huge edge remains with sellers, 52.4% of homes sold went at above listing price and 36.7% sold under asking price. The median days to an accepted offer was just 11. Our next story, Inaugural Country Fest Coming to the Spire, by Julia Marie Davis, who is an independent correspondent. The Spire Center for Performing Arts, 25 and a half Court Street, has brought just about every kind of music to its stage. And on Saturday, August 22nd, it will strike a new chord with the launch of its first Country Fest, Plymouth may be a long way from Nashville, but country music has a devoted following here. And for Spire founder Bob Hollis, the festival fulfills a long-held goal. The three-act concert featuring Grammy-nominated multi-platinum duo Thomas Square, along with April Cushman and Sarah Martin, is something Spire founder and board president Bob Hollis has wanted to bring into the venue. A country music event is something we've been trying to do for a long while, Hollis said. I think it's a natural thing because there is an interest in the Northeast. People may not think there is an interest in country, but when you see some of the big bands that come into the Northeast arenas, they all sell out. The challenge was finding the right combination of artists for an intimate venue like the Spire, Hollis said. Nationally relevant country acts can command considerably high performance fees, he said. So the goal was to assemble a lineup that could draw an audience while still making it a viable event for a roughly 400-seat room. Country Fest will reflect how much the definition of country music has broadened, he said. Today, most of what we see is country rock, more crossover music. Headliner Thompson Square knows something about that evolution. Husband and wife, Kiefer and Shauna Thompson, broke through the multi-platinum hit, Are You Gonna Kiss Me or Not?, and went on to win major country music awards and tour nationally. Now independent after years with record labels, the couple is moving toward music, Kiefer Thompson describes, as more organic, country and singer, songwriter driven. We're toying with doing an acoustic-ish kind of broke down record, Thompson said. It's going to be more country and organic and singer-songwriter and just kind of who we are. That makes the intimate Spire particularly well suited to their current sound. The Spire is exactly the kind of venue that would support what me and Shauna are doing right now with our acoustic show, Thompson said. The evening will begin with Lakeville, Mass native Sarah Martin, now a Nashville recording artist who has performed at the Squire several times, followed by New Hampshire-based Cushman. Hollis referenced Brandi Carlile before her career took off and said he sees similar promise in Cushman. She is really poised for a breakout, he said. For Thompson, the current musical moment feels in some ways like a return to an earlier one. He remembers spending hours in record stores, taking an album home and listening to it repeatedly until he knew every song. It was an immersive process, and I do think the younger generation is starting to pick up on that, Thompson said. My son's 10. He loves everything. He loves Haggard. He loves Depp, Leppard, Willie Nelson, Billy Joel. He has a massive cassette collection. There are numbers behind Thompson's observation. Vinyl has now grown for 19 consecutive years in the United States, surpassing $1 billion in sales in 2025, according to the Recording Industries Association of America. Thompson sees the renewed interest in physical music, from vinyl to CDs and cassettes, as evidence listeners may once again be looking for a deeper connection to the artists and music they love. The connection between artists, audiences, and the music itself is exactly what Spire hopes to create when Country Fest makes its Plymouth debut Saturday night. The Spire Center for Performing Arts inaugural Country Fest begins at 6 p.m. Saturday, August 22nd at 25½ Court Street. For tickets and information, go here. Late Fame is showing at the Plymouth Cinema, 137 Warren Avenue through August 20th. The film follows a legendary New York poet who rediscovers his artistic passion after befriending an eccentric group of young creatives. The unrated film runs 96 minutes and is showing at 4:30 and 7 p.m. in the Maxwell Theater. Our next story, jail visit suspended after cyber attack, by Andre Estes. The Plymouth County Correctional Facility's computer system was shut down Thursday and in-person inmate visits suspended after a cyber intruder bypassed the jail's security system and accessed its servers, an official said. State police, the FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security are investigating the apparent breach, which was detected by the jail's information technology employees early Thursday morning, according to a spokesperson for Plymouth County Sheriff Joseph D. McDonald, Jr. It was unclear what information the person accessed, if any, according to the spokesperson. The investigation will attempt to determine what the intruder was seeking. The system was immediately shut down and will remain inaccessible until the investigation is complete. In-person visits have been paused, the spokesperson said, because the jail was unable to retrieve security document clearings, individuals for visits. Lawyers will still be able to visit their clients, and inmates still have access to tablets and phones. At no time has the physical security of the correctional facility, our staff, detainees, or the general public been at risk, said a statement released by McDonald's office. The jail has no evidence that personal information has been misused, but employees were urged to remain vigilant by reviewing account statements, monitoring credit reports, and promptly reporting suspicious activity. Our next story, Kingston takes Plymouth to court over Costco, by Michael Cohen, independent correspondent. The battle between Plymouth and Kingston to potentially land a Costco is now in court. Litigation over a proposed gas station likely to delay a resolution even longer. The town of Kingston is asking the Massachusetts Land Court to overturn a Plymouth Zoning Board of Appeals decision to allow a gas station at the T.L. Edwards lot at the corner of Cherry Street and Commerce Way. The appeal alleges the site, now the entrance to the gravel yard and rock crushing operation visible from Route 44, that T.L. Edwards hopes to sell to Costco, poses a threat to the groundwater aquifer. A second appeal was filed by the owner of the mobile gas station across the street from the site. Kingston instead wants to demolish the shuttered Macy's at the Kingston Collection Mall and build a new Costco's wholesale club there. The competing sites are about a half mile apart, and getting approval to build a new gas station on site has emerged as a proxy fight between the towns because Costco typically wants a gas station as part of its developments. The Plymouth ZBA granted a special permit last month for the gas station after months of review by the board, town staff, independent engineers, and public hearings, where opponents questioned the project's impact on the groundwater aquifer, the sole source of drinking water for Plymouth and surrounding towns. Two of Kingston's drinking water supply wells are close to the mall property. The state's water protection zone for the Kingston wells touches a small part of the T.L. Edwards site. During the project review, officials from the Plymouth Department of Public Works, Fire Department, and consulting engineers proposed several refinements, including installing monitoring wells on the site to watch for any impact on the groundwater. Ultimately, town officials found the gas station plan complies with the water protection regulations, with the gas pumps and storage tanks placed outside of the protection zone. But the opponents disagreed, and their arguments are now the basis for their court cases. In its appeal, Kingston claims the proposed project increases risk of groundwater contamination, particularly given the presence of petroleum products in connection with the proposed fueling operation. Energy North, a Lawrence-based regional retail and wholesale petroleum distributor that owns the mobile gas station on Cherry Street, wrote in its appeal, the ZBA ignored and dismissed the town of Kingston and plaintiff's concern for public health. Energy North also has funded an engineering report by the firm Haley and Aldrich that challenges the boundaries of the aquifer protection zone. The report was presented to the Plymouth ZBA during its review of the case, but the board did not find it applicable. Under current Mass DEP regulations, the aquifer district map as depicted in the site plan is accurate. Energy North assists in its appeal. The ZBA refused to consider the H&A report and testimony and failed to enforce the requirements that expressly states that when the aquifer protection delineation is in dispute, as it is in this instance, the burden of proof is on the applicant to demonstrate where the delineation should properly be located. Energy North also argues that the new gas station will create traffic problems at the intersection of Cherry Street and Commerce Way and block access to its mobile station there. During ZBA deliberation, several members noted they could only consider the existing aquifer protection zone as it is currently drawn by the state, not any potential future changes. I support the board's decision, said Plymouth Assistant Town Manager Lauren Lind, who previously was the town's Director of Planning and Development and worked on the ZBA case. The board spent a lot of time reviewing the materials during what was a multiple hearing case, and they made a thoughtful, informed decision, Lind said. During the review of the project, the ZBA acknowledged a letter from Kingston Town Administrator Scott Lambasi, expressing the town's concern about contamination of its drinking water supply. But that didn't sit well with some on the board because in its own efforts to pave the way for a Costco gas station, Kingston Town Meeting agreed to a land swap with the owners of the mall to create a lot for a gas station that also touches, in part, the protection zone. It's kind of disingenuous that Kingston would have issues with this, Michael Leary, ZBA member, said at the June 15 meeting on the case. They made it so they can put a gas station that is actually closer to the well than this one. In an email to the Plymouth Independent, Kingston Select Board Chair Kimberly Emberg said the town's appeal is based on the concern about groundwater alone. Concerns Kingston would also share if a gas station is eventually proposed in her town. Here in Kingston, town meeting amended our zoning to allow a gas station by special permit, but only if said use is not located within a watershed protection overlay district. Any specific gas station proposal would still have to go through the Kingston Planning Board and a site plan review before anything could be built, Emberg wrote. During that process, any concerns about the placement of pumps, tanks, drainage, and compliance with the regulation would need to be addressed. Both appeals are assigned to the fast track in land court, which means they will get to trial in about 16 months, unless there's a quicker settlement or summary judgment. The gas station appeals may not completely stall the overall development of a Costco, Williams said, attorney. Sims, attorney for T.L. Edwards, referred any comment on the appeals to the town of Plymouth, but did say his client remains in discussion with potential developers for their gravel site. Whether development ultimately lands in Kingston or Plymouth, not much would change for future customers or employees of the new Costco, since the competing sites are so close. The big difference for the towns is the prospect of about $250,000 in annual property tax revenue from an operating Costco and gas station. Our next story, Full Sale Lot Owner Sues Plymouth Over Eminent Domain by Andrea Estes. The owner of the now-demolished Full Sail Bar on Whitehorse Beach this week sued the town, alleging the price Plymouth paid to take the property by eminent domain was grossly inadequate. The town offered the owner, Theodore Skip Fucillo, $269,000, even though the town meeting had followed the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee and authorized payment up to $875,000 to buy and demolish the property. The amount offered by the government for the properties is grossly inadequate, unfair, and far less than the properties could have been sold for in the fair market, based on the highest and best use of the property, measured on the day of taking, alleged the suit, followed by attorney Tyler Sheets of the firm Finneran and Nicholson. The property taken by the town in February 2025 is in an iconic location along a central access point to the sprawling white sands of Whitehorse Beach along Taylor Avenue and St. Charles Street in Plymouth, says the suit filed Tuesday in Plymouth Superior Court. Fucillo is seeking unspecified just compensation for the taking of its property, interest, and lawyer's fees. The fair price will be determined in the litigation, Sheets wrote in an email, if the town doesn't step up and make an acceptable offer. But Plymouth officials responding to the suit said the town paid a fair price for the property. The $857,000 offered by the $875,000 offered by the CPC assumed Fucillo owned six properties along the beach. But the town discovered Fucillo only owned five of the properties, and the largest parcel belonged to someone else, according to town manager Derek Brindisi. The town worked with the second owner and negotiated a purchase price and bought the parcel for around $250,000, Brindisi said. The town also had a signed purchase and sale agreement with Fucillo, Brindisi said, but he backed out. So 18 months ago, town officials took his five properties by eminent domain and sent Fucillo a check for what they say was their appraised value, $269,000. The dilapidated shack was demolished in June 2026. In its place will be a parking lot with gravel and landscaping, a pathway to the beach, and shade sails, Brindisi said. This property was a blight in the neighborhood for many decades, he said. The town had an agreement in place, but the owner no longer wanted to cooperate, so unfortunately the town had to take the property by eminent domain. The tiny bar was a popular spot for beachgoers in the 1970s and 1930s, but had been closed for many years when a fire heavily damaged the building in 2016. It had been a dilapidated, boarded-up old bar for a long time before the fire, years ago, said Select Board member Kevin Canty. It was what we would refer to as an attractive nuisance. After negotiations devolved, we took it by eminent domain, Canty said of the Fucillo properties. We believed and still believe we paid fair market value of the parcels he did own. The Independent was there when the building came down in front of about a dozen spectators. During the demolition, one of the workers discovered beer glasses and a cocktail shaker inside and handed them to Roberta Capella, great-granddaughter of the bar's original owner. Our next story, from Your View. You want to go to the beach? Walk. By Wendy Howland. As soon as I was old enough to cross the street, I was on the beach all year. Not to get too old person cranky, but at the time there were only three vehicles in town able to drive down to the point. One, a Jeep owned by Marillis Bittinger Bolonsky. If you wanted to get up close and personal with the dunes and bug light, you walked. We did. Now it seems that a God-given right to take a motor vehicle loaded with people and gear and petroleum byproducts to compact the sand and leave your fumes all over and scare the terns and other wild birds. Do you wonder why there are hardly any starfish, sand dollars, razor clams, moon sails, and horseshoe crabs for your kids to find anymore? It makes me almost ill to look out there of a nice day and see the sun glaring off windshields like the beach were a huge used car lot. As I just want to go to the beach, well, it seems as if the petition is asking the DNR and other Enviro Protection agencies to do yet another study in hopes that this one can continue. One thing about prayer, though, sometimes the answer is no, to which I would add, walk. Here are a few other art events that will be coming and showing in Plymouth. I read about Late Fame is showing at the Plymouth Cinema. The Rivals and Isaiah King is showing at Plymouth Cinema, 137 Warren Avenue, through August 27th. The film centers on Amzia King, an Oklahoma beekeeper and bluegrass musician who reconnects with his former foster daughter, Kateri, only to find the family business threatened by beekeeping rivals. The R-rated film runs 2 hours 11 minutes and is showing at 4:30 and 7 p.m. through August 27th. And Tuesday, August 18th, the Spire Center for the Performing Arts at 27.5 Court Street welcomes the world-famous Glenn Miller Orchestra at 7 p.m. One of the most enduring big bands in music history, the orchestra brought distinctive sound of the swing era to the stage with classics associated with bandleader Glenn Miller and his legendary orchestra. And today, Thursday, August 20th, the Spire Center for Performing Arts again presents a second performance by the world-famous Glenn Miller Orchestra at 7 p.m. The celebrated ensemble continues the musical legacy of Glenn Miller with the unmistakably big band sound that made his orchestra one of the defining acts of the swing era. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. That is today, at the Spire Performing Center for the Arts. With that, we'll close our broadcast. Thank you for tuning in to the Talking Information Center.